Okay, there is a very fundamental machlokas that takes place in the world of halacha about how we relate to Jews who are not observant, Jews who are not from. And what's fascinating is that lechora you do have a little bit of a shift from the way things are described in the time of Chazal. And what we're going to focus on today are, in particular, the mahalachim of the Chaznish and Rav Kook, to how they think one should interact and how they relate to dafka non-observant Jews, those Jews who are not from. And our primary goal today is to understand not only their views, but also the implications of their views. What it does as far as Israeli society, what it does as far as day-to-day interactions, what's really going on. I want to start by giving a bit of a hakdama. I apologize that a lot of what we're going to quote today, maybe a lot of things not on the sheet today, but hopefully things can still be put together nicely. Lemaisa, like this. Chazal are very clear that a person who is not Shomer Torah u'mitzvos, a person who is not a ma'amin, that such a person has a unique kind of a halachic status. The Gemara tells us an example in the first parak of Chulin, his shechita is not considered to be a good shechita. Chazal tells if you're Michal Shabbos before Hesia and you touch wine, so that wine has the potential to become Yayin Nesech as a result. That's already quoted in Halach, Rabbi Yosef quotes that, as do others, that the Yayin of a Michal Shabbos before Hesia, so you have the ability to passel it. We have discussions also in Chazal and in some of the contemporary poskim, even about can I count such people for minyanim? Someone who's not from, can he count as part of a minyan? The sugyas of Maseches Avodah Zarah are uniquely intense as far as moridin velo ma'alin, lo moridin velo ma'alin. When a person, when it seems like you're almost passively contributing to the death of someone who's not considered to be a ma'amin. So those are all important questions. And when you look at Chazal, they seem to have a very harsh kind of a take on those Jews that are mugdar halachically as kofrim. Things begin to shift a little bit with a very famous comment of the Rambam Hilchos Mamrim. It's all by way of hakdama to appreciate what's going on with Rav Kook and the Chazanesh. The Rambam Hilchos Mamrim is talking about the children of Karayim, and he points out like this. There is a Gemara in the 7th Parak of Masechta Shabbos which tells us that a tinok shenishba, literally, a child who was taken captive, a Jewish child that is at a very young age is taken captive and knows nothing about Torah mitzvos because that child has never had the opportunity to learn anything. They were taken captive at a very young age and they were put in some faraway place. That child is not viewed as responsible when it comes to his averos because he really couldn't have known that much better. The Rambam extended that category to the children of Karayim. And the Rambam wrote that even though they're not keeping Torah mitzvos, they're people that reject ideas about their kofir b'torah sheba alpeh. Nevertheless, says the Rambam, Rehu ketino shenishba b'neihem v'gadlu, they were brought up in a culture in which was promoting certain ideas, and therefore we're going to view them really as kofrim. We're going to view them as a tino shenishba, and they're not going to be held as accountable for their actions. The Rambam Hilchos Mamrim, a very, very important yesod, we're not going to view them as being at all as accountable. The concept of tino shenishba applies not only to those who are physically taken captive at a young age, but even the children of Karaites. In modern times, you have a discussion, what do we do about Jews who are no longer, who are not religious? To what extent can I extend that category to Reform Jews, to Jews that are impacted by Haskalah, to Jews that are living in a, that may even identify as being part of the Jewish community, but reject the idea of Torah Misinai and reject the idea of Torah Mitzvos and things like that? How exactly do I relate to Jews in more contemporary times? So, to give, there is a very well-known machlokas between the Binyan Tzion and the Minchas Elazar, the Munkach Rebbe. The Binyan Tzion maintains in a psak that he wrote was not necessarily halacha lemaisa, that he thinks nowadays, at least with the kinds of Jews he was referring to, we can also give them the halachic status of Tinu Shnishba. He's talking there about the issue about touching Yayin from someone who's Michal Shabbos. The Binyan Tzion thinks there's room potentially to be Mekel, even though Hamachmir Tavo Alav Bracha, Gam L'Mekilim Yesh L'Malamim L'Smoch, because a lot of these people are not so terrible, they're more like a Tinok Shnishba, they're not really going to be categorized as being real Kofrim. The Minchas Elazar, the Minchas Rebbe, argues B'Tkifas, not at all is that the case. The Pasha Pshat of Chazal is that such people are really Kofrim, we have to distance ourselves from them. There's going to be an intense degree of negativity, Dafka, towards those who are not considered to be observant. He tines that the Rambam is not a great precedent because he suggests that the Karam in the time of the Rambam were really a separate and independent community and therefore there was less fallout from members of that community impacting Klal Yisrael because they were separate. They were separate, and there wasn't as much of a chashash. Ravadia points out in the Tshuva that's not really true. That Karaim, it's clear from the writings of the Rambam, were really integrated and did see from Jews. But be that as it may, we have a bit of a machlokas. What's the status of non-frum Jews, non-observant Jews, and different kinds of chilukim between those that are maybe believers but reject certain things, those that have no connection whatsoever. You have a lot of different gradations. But the Ben Yetzirin and the Michas Lazer reflect two very different models. One in which Tinoch Nishba, we can justify and not treat them with the same sense of severity. And the second model in which we're really going to speak with a certain degree of intensity and negativity, dafka towards those who are kofrim, who are not shomer Torah u mitzvos. Okay. This is nafkaminas for a variety of areas of halacha. But the Chazon Ish and Rav Kook, in their own way, add their unique views to this question. The Chazon Ish is very, very famous, as is Rav Kook, I think. We'll try to add some new layers to the discussion. Let's start kacha. First of all, I have to understand that the Chazon Ish, as we spoke about the first week, is forced to deal with non-observant Jews. He's forced to deal with non-observant Jews because he is the quote-unquote gadol in Eretz Yisrael. He's one of the major gadolim in Eretz Yisrael when the founding of the state. He has to interact. He's meeting with Ben-Gurion. He has to interact a little bit to be able to best figure out how we're going to interact with this group. The Chazon Ish also, these are all important to know, is representing the minority. It's not a case where the majority of people are from, and the question is, what do we do with the minority that we're going in a different direction? If you're comparing Bnei Brak and Tel Aviv, so Bnei Brak is nothing, especially in time of Chesh, but even now, compared to the numbers of Tel Aviv. And therefore, part of the question that he's dealing with is the question of how you have a minority of Jews, how are we going to relate to a reality where the majority of people are not from. That's some of the background of it. So he's forced to deal with these issues. Like many post-Gemar, he's forced to deal with them. He's forced to deal with them through the founding of the state in a way in which he's talking about the minority of people in Bnei Brak and how exactly you're gonna handle it. The Chazon Ish himself, we're going to, again, try to unpackage a couple of different layers. Number one, the Chazon Ish in Yerideya and Siman Beis, a very, very famous Chazon Ish with a lot of separate discussions there, is talking about this sugya Maseches Avodah Zarah of Moridim Velo Ma'alin, the harshness of bringing non-frum people down to a pit and maybe leaving them there. The Chazon Ish is talking about there, and he says something which is really fascinating, and we have to just unpackage this one paragraph. It's incredibly well known, but let's point out as follows. Ein din moridin ela bizman shaskechaso yisbarach gluya. The whole din of moridin, of taking a kofer, a heretic, and bringing him down into a pit, that only is true when God's providence is revealed. V'at hayakir harisham gidru shel olam. Then it was, the right in the halach was to sort of destroy them and to push them away, etc. Aval bizmana helem, shenichrasa ha'amunah min dalas ha'am. Now you have a time period of emptiness. There's a void of amuna in the world. Ein b'maisa ha'urada geder ha'pirza el tosefes ha'pirza. If you take someone who's a kofer and you bring him down and you physically throw him down into a pit, you're not going to be lessening the problem of kfira. You're going to be enhancing it. It looks like an act of violence. Some would suggest because it, technically speaking, is an act of violence. Because our primary goal is to build and fix. There's no din like this if it's not going to contribute positively. And we should bring them back not through negative force and charamim. We should bring them back by love. What the Chazon Ish is going to do is he's going to invoke the notion of Tinoch Shenishba when it comes to non-frum Jews. But he's doing it, introducing it in a fascinating way. Part of, for the Chazon Ish, there's really sort of two factors that he brings up here that are going to shift the way you relate to non-observant Jews. Number one is the effectiveness of the method. Part of what we're trying to do, at least in the din of Moridim v'lo Ma'alin, is to try to ultimately bring people back. And there was an error suggested to Chazon Ish where the best way to bring people back was to speak very harshly and act sometimes in a way which looks like it's almost violent towards them, because that will bring people back. Now that's less true. It's going to impact the way we respond, meaning the halacha hasn't changed, but as the metziah shifted, what's going to bring people closer, what's not, we're going to interact a little bit differently. Just like in chinuch as a whole, there was an era where more direct, harsh mussar was going to be more effective and more impactful. But it could be in the world of positive psychology and the like, a more positive emphasis may be something which is more effective. At least that's possible. The second thing the Chazon Ish does, which is fascinating, is in describing what makes you into a tinok shenishba, he introduces a fascinating factor into a halachic discussion. It's one thing to say, like the Gemara in Shabbat, tinok shenishba, he has no access and he has no awareness. It's one thing to say, as the Rambam seems to have said, he's brought up in a particular culture, and therefore that's really what he's taught, even though the Maisei may have sought from people, that's really what he's taught. What the Chazon Ish is bringing in is a shift in terms of how Ribono Shel Olam is nohag with this world. There's a shift as far as divine providence, Hashgacha Pratis. What's really going on here is a fascinating, he's saying, Lemaisa, there was a time of Nisim Gluyim. Lemaisa, there was a time where miracles were revealed and people could understand and see very clearly the Hashgacha of Ribono Shel Olam. But, says Chazon Ish, Bizman Hazeh, we don't see that and don't appreciate it so much. And because of that, it's going to impact Tinush Nishba, meaning this almost metaphysical shift as far as how the Ribono Shel Olam is knowing in this world is therefore going to make people less accountable, at least certain kinds of people, when they mess up. How sweeping the Chazon Ish is not so clear. What would he say about, again, some questioning Bizman Hazeh, things a little bit different. But for the Chazon Ish, that's his primary chiddush. A quick point in brackets, which I find to be fascinating. Rabbi Yaakov Ariel, the Rav HaRashi of Ramat Gan, pointed out an unbelievable ha'ara on this Chazon Ish. L'chora, it's not true. There were not more revealed miracles in the times of Chazal, when Chazal were speaking about dealing with these people harshly, or times of Rishonim, than there are in the times of the Chazon Ish. If you were comparing it to the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and you were saying that the Makos in Mitzrayim, that's where things were revealed, and that's why he spoke to them harshly. But on nowadays, I can hear that contrast. But from Chazal to nowadays, from something we've shown until nowadays, there wasn't such a shift. We don't have records of Nisan Gluyim going on the same way. So Yaakov Ariel suggests that the difference for the Chazon Ish is not the metaphysical shift or the question of how it is Baruch Hu's Hashgacha, how it manifests in this world, but the way in which people are going to relate to it. That he suggests that even nowadays, there are examples of there being God's Hashgacha, just the nature of the culture as a whole is that we don't always relate to it as such. We don't always perceive it as such. Two people can look at the same event, and some can see Nisim, and some can say, I don't see anything there. And that's the Chazon Ish, the reality he's referring to, is people like to look at something and really reject it. A great example of that is, this is the, you know, when we're talking about 50 years since we have Yerushalayim, the Six-Day War is a great example of that. You can have many who are going to look at it and say, it's Pashut, I see that there are Nisim there. Be it this fun emergency with Shalom, or certainly many in the Tilumi world, they'll look at that and say, it's Pashut, I see Nisim there. And you'll have others, be it in the secular world, some of the secular generals, I think Rabin thought, no real, there weren't Nisim there, it was just good military planning and an intelligent, you know, and a great job done by the Israeli army. To some, all the way on the right, they're going to say, there's Bichlal, no miracle there. So some of it has to do less with whether or not there are, and more with whether or not how people perceive and relate to things. But for the Chazon Ish, that's the first step. When it comes to individual people, we're going to perceive them as not being as accountable. Here's the Kinech, and this is unbelievable hara. We know one other thing about the Chazon Ish when it comes to non-from Jews. It's the Gemara Maseches Sanhedrin, when the famous meeting of the Chazon Ish and Ben Gurion. When the Chazon Ish and Ben Gurion are going to meet, we spoke about it the first week. So the Chazon Ish, when Ben Gurion asks the Chazon Ish, the way that it's recorded in certain Sfarim, when the Chazon Ish asks Ben Gurion, do you have a cup from the back? In the closet. When the Chazon Ish asks Ben Gurion, when Ben Gurion asks Chazon Ish, how are we going to all get together? How are we going to have secular Jews living alongside from Jews? And the Chazon Ish gave a mashal. The mashal was two people coming, one of them with a wagon that's full. Different version exactly. The mashal is one of them with a wagon that's empty. So the person with the wagon that's empty gives right of way to the one with the wagon that's full. And Chazon Ish said, we are Torah, we have a Mesorah, our wagon is full, and your wagon is empty, and because your wagon is empty, you're going to be secondary to our wagon. From Jews are perceived as being the full wagon, and non-Jews are perceived as, and sorry, the non-from Jews are the ones who are carrying more of the more of an empty wagon. What's pshat in here? You ready? I'll tell you now, an unbelievable ha'ara. Professor Aviezer Ravitsky wrote this in an article. It's a great shtickle. L'chora, there's a chiddush here. What was the Chazanish comparing non-observant Jews to? An empty wagon. If you were really Chazal, how would you have referred to them? Not as an empty wagon, but as a... probably a wagon with poison in it. A wagon that was filled with bad things. He's removed them. In a certain sense, he's comparing them to being empty. He's comparing them to being void of things. He's not emphasizing the negative elements of what they do. He's more taking them away from positive and negative. They're an empty wagon. That, he suggests, is part of what the Chazanish is doing in Yoredeya also. What the Chazanish is doing is something fascinating. He's saying, when you're interacting with non-Frum Jews, this is the reality. The ideology they stand for contributes nothing productive. Kfira is something which is absolutely terrible. But when I relate to them as individual people, I don't relate to them with harsh negativity of people that are carrying dangerous anti-Torah things. On an individual, maybe the movement, certain the ideology as a whole, maybe. But I'm going to relate to them as people who are essentially void. They're not held accountable the same way for their actions. They're a tinok shenishba. They're not really held anywhere near as accountable. What, therefore, how am I going to act to them? So I'm going to deal with them interpersonally with a degree of ava, because the harsh reaction is not going to work the same way. So what the Chazanish is doing is something which is fascinating, and will explain the implications this has for elements of Haredi society here in Eretz Yisrael and its Gaonis. What's going to happen is like this. Interpersonally, I have an easy time dealing with them, because I don't view them as these negative people just trying to... These are people that are tinok shenishba. These are people that are, it's beyond their control. I don't want to... Step one. Step two, I'm able to have a degree of interaction with them, be it a little bit personally as far as bringing it back through Ahava. I can have some interaction with them because they're not fundamentally as bad as the Kofrim that Chazal were describing. And that's why, as an example, Haredi parties are able to partner with people in the Knesset. How are they doing that? How are you allowed to have a Haredi party that's going to partner with Netanyahu, who is not a Frum Jew, and the Likud? How are they able to do that? Part of it's because, if you, again, at least part of the Svara, maybe, practically you could do that. How can I do it practically? Well, if they're really like the negative Kofrim described by the Gemaras of Arzara and Chulin, you really can't be Mishtatef with them at all. What allows me to view it in a pragmatic way is the belief that on an individual level, they're not as, not really there the same way. But there's one additional thing. While on an individual level, I don't perceive them as being as terrible or as responsible for their actions, what they stand for and their ideology is something which is terrible. It's called kulo ra. The notion of the kfira that gets espoused there is something which is really, really terrible. And that's what the Chazanish is setting up, is a culture that on the one hand can interact on some level with, but I want to establish a fundamentally separate community. Bnei Brak is not going to have interaction with Tel Aviv. Bnei Brak is going to be a community of kulo Torah, where you're not going to have those same kinds of day-to-day interactions because I don't want the influence of them. It has a shmek of Minchas Elazar, much as it's fundamentally much more similar to the Binyan Tzion. It's like the Binyan Tzion in that it can take Kinyan Shnishba, but unlike some of the shitas like the Binyan Tzion and the Melamed Lahoel of W.T. Hoffman, they're invoking Tinok Shnishba to allow more interaction. Chazanish is not arguing for that. Chazanish is arguing for a separate society, albeit a separate society that's not going to view that other society in as harsh terms. It's going to say what they stand for is terrible, and I have to speak about how terrible it is, and I don't want to be influenced by it, but individually, they're not really as responsible. Individually, I have to try to interact with them in a more pleasant way instead of interacting with them in a more harsh way. That's more or less the view of the Chazanish. It's a nuanced one. It's one which is very fascinating. What they stand for ideologically, I reject entirely, but they themselves not as personally responsible. Because they're not as personally responsible, there are areas in which we can, for pragmatic or practical reasons, we can decide we're going to get back together and be able to work together. Rav Kook has a bit of a different mahalach. Now, Rav Kook passes away before the founding of the state, and Rav Kook has a bit of a different general overview, and we're going to try to go through it in a certain sense. There's a lot written about Rav Kook, and I can't say for sure that, you know, we're giving anything near a thorough view, But I do want us to understand what Rav Kook does and how it's a little bit different. Number one, Rav Kook does believe in this idea of Tino Shenishba. Rav Kook does believe in the idea that when we're dealing, at least in certain letters, when we're talking about non-from Jews, that these are people that we should, that are not personally responsible the same way. He seems to go even a little bit further than that. If you look here in Igros Raya, in source number 6, he writes in one place that Hey manusim gemurim vechalin lan aladon onas kiraton. He writes that they're even more in the category of like a complete kind of onas, onas which is beyond vilnara lo sasa davar. That they are really it's perceived as being entirely beyond their control. They're anusim. Now Rav Kook goes one step further, and this is a massive step further. Rav Kook is going to argue that the ultimate goal is not to establish separate communities as a result. Rav Kook understands that we can have interaction there, and Rav Kook is going to try to find Kedusha in that same ideology. For the Chaznis, the ideology is terrible and not Jewish, as much as we just have to individually still maintain the connection. For Rav Kook, the ideology itself is somewhat fraud. There's Kedusha in the ideology. That the secular Zionists who are coming there, that in their worldview is something which is kadosh. And that's going to shift things a little bit. Let's just start going a little bit like this. Number 7. Cook there, a very famous line, but it does give us some insight. Hatzikim ha-tahorim einam koban al-risha el-mosifin tzedek and koban al-kfira el-mosifin emuna and koban al-risha el-mosifin chachma. The job in general of cooking instead of tzaddik is not to fight against the bad, but to mosif good, which means general orientation you're going to have in interacting with people who are not religious is going to be more about mosif good than dealing in a harsh and negative way. Then Rav Kook, and some of us that have learned Rav Kook on Wednesday mornings are familiar with some of these things, some of them much, much more. Rav Kook and Halos Nitzotzos, there in Midot HaRaya, Rav Kook writes that there is in every single pu'ula mi pu'ulos ha'adam, every shmiya and kriya, and every single thing that a person does, there is something kadosh there that can be elevated. There is something kadosh there that I can try to uplift and I can try to bring up. And Rav Kook is going to speak about when you're dealing with some of these non-Semitic secular Zionists, especially of his era, who were very idealistic, who were giving of themselves to build the state. Rav Kook could talk about how they had a relationship to the physical elements of Eretz Yisrael that were incredibly kadosh, the physical realm. That's like that, I get referenced sometimes from that guy who spoke last year about like taking up that trophy from your shul's victory in like the local softball tournament and putting it next to the Aron Kodesh, he was arguing based on the writings of Rav Kook. So whether if that's a little bit far, you know, it's possible. But part of the orientation of that was the notion that physical, they're representing an element which is very, very kosher. For Rav Kook, there's a certain basic morality and understanding that some of those secular Jews have that's very, very holy. So for Rav Kook, when you're talking about non-observant Jews, it's not just that on an individual level, I'm going to say, Tinoch Shnishba, Reim Kanusim. The dominant view of Rav Kook is that these are people that are in touch with certain real elements of Yadus. For Rav Kook, some of them are in touch with elements of Yadus that there are from Jews who are not in touch with. That whole physical realm of the cultivation of the Jewish body and things like that, that's something which you don't have in from Jews the same way. The from Jew that just sits all day in a room and just learns, etc., and he's not building a land, he's not doing... So that's something which is which he's missing a certain element, Rav Kook may possibly argue, at least in the world of ideology, in how you're going to interact with them. That's different than the Chazon Ish. It's very wild and sweeping. It's different in a certain sense than what you're going to find in Chazal. For Rav Kook, part of that is because he understands that we're part of an era of Jewish history. Klal Yisrael shifting, going back to Eretz Yisrael, all that's going on, is part of, for Rav Kook, a larger development of the world continuing to progress to more and more Kedusha. Rav Kook is not the biggest believer in at least certain elements of Yerides HaDoros, that generations are just falling, getting worse and worse. Rav Kook understands there's a certain progress of generations, that we're increasing Kedusha over time. And Rav Kook, therefore, is going to the way it's the Chalban and Shuva all the way in Elul, that part of what you're trying to cultivate when we speak about the thought of Rav Kook is you're talking about he believes that there's a progress becoming more and more Kadosh. But the people around me are not keeping Torah mitzvos, but they can still have an element of Kedusha which is present there. That's the theology of Rav Kook. What is fascinating is the following, and this is, I think, a very important yesod. The first I saw that points out is Wilkenstein in an article in Torah 14, The Parameters of Tolerance. He points out something, but I want to just give you a bit of a hakdama because this yesod is an unbelievably, I believe, interesting one. You will sometimes read Balei Machshava, and sometimes when you learn the writings of certain Balei Machshava, they're saying very, very wild things. A good example, Rabbi David Shafkin wrote about this. A great example is Ishbitz and Reb Tzadok. The Ishbitzer and Reb Tzadok, we learned some of Reb Tzadok a couple of years ago in Kayetzman. They were very wild thinkers that challenged on a theological level. In the world of Machshava, they challenged lots of different ideas, very, very controversial as far as their thought. What is fascinating, though, is that when you deal with the question, not always of what they believed, but how they lived their lives, they appear to have lived their lives more or less as regular from Jews. Their machshava was wild. They were arguing there isn't that much bechira. They were arguing at times for like a continued revelation. In modern times, you have people that are arguing based on the writings of Reb Tzadok and the Ishbitzer that we should dafka be giving smicha to women, like shift because of the writings of the Ishbitzer and Reb Tzadok. Some of them not that crazy as far as the arguments go. Some of them you could be don, Reb Tzadok. Some of them not as crazy. But part of the question to deal with is not everyone that had a wild theology was then using that limaisa. And the question becomes, why would that be? That's an important question. How much they meant, how much they thought it should be invoked limaisa. But sometimes you have people, again, some of the women's being stuff is not so question, whatever, you'll read it. But when you're talking about Reb Tzadok and Ishbitzer, the fact that they may have been very wild theologically doesn't mean it always impacted their actions the same way. With Rav Kook, you have a little bit of a similar question. And here, I think that you can, let's point it like this. Rav Kook in the Tzioni world is the dominant figure. It is very, very hard to be a major figure in the Tzioni world if you're not in many ways viewed as being part of the Mesorah of Rav Kook. Rav Lichtenstein, for all of Rav Lichtenstein's tremendous greatness, part of what was a challenge as far as the Datilu Mi world relating to him a certain way, obviously as a Torah giant, that was clear, but was that he's not coming from the Mesorah of Rav Kook. Adarab, he's very uncomfortable with certain elements of Rav Kook. He's more from the world of Salvechik. One of the other giants of the Tzioni world, Rav Nachum Rabinovich and Malei Adumim, a giant in Torah, is also not as much of a real Rav Kook person. He's much more of a Maimonidean, of a Rambam person. That's going to impact how Tzioni world relates to them. When you deal with Rav Kook, though, so I'm working off of Rav Kook, but you're going to see sometimes, this, at some point I would love to give some shiurim on this, you're going to see the legacy of Rav Kook is used very differently depending on who you are. The machshava of Rav Kook, some of these ideas would make you be exceptionally open-minded and progressive and have a lot of interactions with non-religious people and view what they're doing with a certain element of Kedusha. You would say the orientation of Rav Kook, looking at the finite Kedusha and everything, is going to impact. I don't want to live separate lives. I don't want a Dati Lumi community that's like Nofi alone, where they're living very, very separate. I want a Dati Lumi community where they're much more integrated, and I have more exposure, and I can interact more, and I can build society and learn from them, etc. Whereas sometimes in Rav Kook, and you have this question, Rav Kook wrote shuvas, and Rav Kook wrote letters. And Rav Kook is not just a person who's writing in theory. Rav Kook's a person who's living in practice. And when you look at Rav Kook's tshuvas, we have machloksim amongst like chokrim. Are Rav Kook's tshuvas regular tshuvas, like any other person? Or is tshuvas also impacted by his unique worldview? How do I learn tshuvas of Rav Kook? They're regular tshuvas or not as much regular tshuvas? And one of the things that's fascinating, which Rav Lichtenstein writes here, is an impression of his. He writes, if pressed to consider for instance the lives and thought of Rav Kook and the Rav, I believe it would be fair to conclude that, says Lichtenstein, well, perhaps neither was thoroughly consistent. Rav Kook was philosophically far more tolerant, but as a public figure, tolerated less. Rav Kook, theologically, was very open to non-from people and what they could contribute, but Limaisa, Rav Kook dealt with fairly harshly when it came to people that were not as from. When it came to Tachlis and many of his tshuvas, he did deal with a certain kind of harshness, or he was comfortable setting certain very firm distinctions. He puts that here. Shigar has this in Zot Briti. It's a Zot Briti, I should probably say. Here he has. It's interesting. It's three halachos on civil marriage, gerus, and the phenomenon of Jews who are not. And he talks about the Rav Kook and the Chazon Ish here and some other mahalachim also.
But he points out some tshuvas of Rav Kook. Rav Kook has a tshuva in Orech Mitzvah or Chaim Simin Yudeis about Shkita, where Rav Kook deals very, very harshly, having a non from Shochei. Bevadmei Rav Dabar Mizbarli Bevir HaMachal B'Din Torah Zeh Isha Osechein Ein Bezeh Shum Safek Shebe Mechil Hashem Levado Aser Le'ish Kazeh La'af Bechol Dabar Shebekdusha Yos Bedvarm Ke'elah Ba'Koach Shalkal Vaz Misrael. You can't. A harshness. The guy is someone who's rejecting certain ideas in Torah mitzvot. You have to distance. You can't have him be involved in Dabar Shebekdusha. When it comes to Shliach Tzibor, Rav Kook there in Orach Mishpat Simon Yudalid, Rav Kook, a person who is Okhal Novel to trade for, Michal Shabbos, shaves with a razor, can he be a Shliach Tzibor? Rav Kook also is dealing in a very, very harsh way with such a person. Gam kein das rova poskim, sh'im emman osor Shliach Tzibor kavua l'chadchila, you can't have a non-from Jew who's going to daven for the Amid. Many of our shuls may do this. You have a guy who comes for a yard site who is not so observant. He doesn't keep Shabbos. And he wants to daven for the Amid. Things like that. Sometimes you can have shuls where that could happen. Where with Kook is, there's a certain harshness there. Now, not always. He's more makel, as Shigar points out. This is the tshuva in Ezra's Kohen, Simon Chafala. When it comes to, can you count the eight echad pimater aguna of a Jew's Michal Shabbos? How are we going to relate to him? But Rav Kook, sometimes, when dealing with it in practice, dealt with it with a certain harshness. Now, or at least with a comfort in establishing lines that you would not have necessarily anticipated just from learning his Machshava. Sometimes that's because, why would that be? What? So some of that may be an idea, is that there may be real distinctions between two realms. Like the Chasam Sofer thought that mixing Halacha and Machshava is an Isser of Kilayim. It's like you can't mix wool and linen. You can't mix halacha and machshava. That may be one idea. Rav Kook was Lavdavka the biggest believer in that. He thought you could integrate a little bit. Sometimes I wonder if it's that if your theology is so open-minded, you know, if you don't pull back a little bit lemaisa, things can get really out of control. You have to like anchor things a little bit. Sometimes it's because Rav Kook may have thought that certain things were there in theory, but only a certain elevated person could really be able to perceive it appropriately, and that we have to know how to deal with it. Not entirely clear, but for Rav Kook, you're going to have a little bit of a different element. But whereas in the Chaznish, in the world that he's having, you interact, I reject the ideology, but I can interact with them in a fairly smooth way for pragmatic reasons, as long as we're fundamentally different communities with a lot of distance. For Rav Kook, you're going to have those who are going to learn Rav Kook in different ways, some jumping much more on some of the halachas, some a little bit less. So this came up at a Ram meeting recently. What are we talking about? It came up as I forget what it was. We were talking about something, about maybe Yom HaZikaron, what we should do for Yom HaZikaron. So I was like, I think trying to cause trouble when they were talking about what to do by bringing up, this is more of like my own like sociological like interest. I was bringing up, like, should we go in the morning at a time when like all of us were at societies at the cemetery? Should we go more in the afternoon, which is a little bit quieter? So we were mostly being done from it as far as like morning Seder versus afternoon Seder, questions about like, is it going to be too busy in the morning and therefore it's smooth in the afternoon? So I said to the Israeli rabbi next to me, really mostly for my own kicks, like, what would like Rav Kook think we should do? Should we daf to go and like interact when like the non-frum people are there, albeit but, like not to be dressed like tenuously at all, but should we go there because like it's important to like understand the chashivas of what they do? Would Rav Kook argue like more for like whatever? So I was, you know, trying to like provoke a little bit and see where it is. But you really have people that are going very, very different directions. Like, no. Rav Kook would hold for sure not. You have to be like a little bit, like in the Chardal world especially. The Rebbe next to me was more of a Chardal person who was like, no, have to have Gedarim, much as theological, you know, there are certain distinctions, you have to be. And others would say like, no, it's about being participating in their building of the land and being Machshavid and things like that. Those are all important discussions. But part of the legacy of Rav Kook is going to be somewhat unclear. As Chazal we spoke about today, we tried Be'etzem to do as follows. The notion of non-from Jews is something which has always been the case, but now we're dealing with the vast majority, and we're dealing with a society in which there's, the way the Chaznitz describes it, where there's not revealed miracles the same way. And that's very, very easy to not believe and to question and the like. And the question becomes, how I relate to them? This has been a discussion in many, many post-Kim. How I relate to them? Questions like, who you can count for a minion, who can be a Shliach Tzibor, who you can count for a Zimun. Questions like, teaching Torah to a Talmud Sheino Hagun. Who are you allowed to teach Torah to? A lot of different shilas that are all going to emerge here as a result. They're Yayin, they're Shechita, etc. What we tried to focus on today are the perspective of the Chaznish and Rav Kook. Both of them have a degree of nuance. Chaznish is into the Tinoch Shnishpa idea, but he's very into that not being a heter for day-to-day interaction as much as having a separate community, albeit it's an empty cart,
Therefore, we can't have a degree of interaction, especially in the political realm and things like that. For Cook, theologically, there's a lot to talk about as far as the general coming together of and viewing things that are done with a certain kind of kedusha, with the same recognition and awareness that we have to have certain lines, and that when it comes to some other practical questions, Rav Cook is not necessarily as impacted in this machshava by all of his halacha. One of the things which is important in dealing with complex issues, you often will find the great deal with them in nuanced ways. The mahalach you can see once in a while nowadays of like, it's all good, we have to just love everyone, and therefore we make on all areas of halacha also, is not a perspective that Rav Cook really embraced. And I think that you'll find a lot of the greats often have nuanced views, but their nuanced views are going to lead to radically different perspectives as far as the kinds of communities that are going to be set up. And one of the things that we're trying to accomplish in this shiurim as a whole is to understand a lot of what we do, be it in the Derech HaLimud, be it in the Das Torah question, or the interactions with non-from in the state, is that when societies are being structured, the Chaznish is a dominant person in that. They're based on shitos. They're based on underlying ideas as far as society which can be more separate, society which can be more integrated, society which can function on some level with others, but on other levels not. There's a lot of things here, and hopefully this gave us a little bit of increased insight. Shkari, guys, have a great day.